to stop looking at her like that, as though pulling that trigger might kill him as much as it would her. Nika awaited the pain, not bothering to numb herself, because she trusted Cochin would make it quick. If these were her final moments, she wanted to feel something. But Cochin didn't shoot her. She saw the indecision behind his eyes, and if she could soothe him now, she would not kill him. Instead, she yearned only to understand the thoughts that agonized him. And more than that, she wanted to know why he hesitated. Did he feel it too? The loneliness lifted off his chest? They were eclipsing planets, lining up in orbit for just a breath before the death of their star. Two whales crossing paths in the desolate vastness of the ocean. She saw that longing etched in his expression, in the tremble of his arm. So even before his finger withdrew from the trigger, even before he lowered the gun, she knew he would not shoot her. He couldn't. Cochin set down the gun. Nika let a withheld breath escape between her lips. He exhaled and pinched the bridge of his nose as he collapsed in a chair.
I've spent so long looking for someone like you.
Someone like you.
Yet, you would kill me to hide your crime?
Cochin winced. He was growing paler, and blood trailed him on the ground.
No.
He flicked his hand toward the discarded gun. I don't think I could live with myself if I did. If ever he had been honest with her, it was then, because his tone was touched with a vulnerability that crystallized him in glass, as though a hateful look from her might break him. More questions rose to her tongue, but another wince drew her attention to his wound. The bloodstain still expanded. Why didn't he heal himself?
You're losing blood, she said, if only to take his eyes off her.
She couldn't stand how much she saw herself in them. As though just remembering, Cochin lifted his hand to reveal a bloom of blood across his white dress shirt. He crossed the room toward the birdcage, opened the door, and drew out a canary in his fist. Discarding his gloves, Cochin enclosed it in his palm, and when he opened his fingers, the bird was limp, and the cut in his skin was gone but for a red mark. Though she'd done the same for herself so many times before, seeing another soothe felt like witnessing a miracle. Now the pieces fell into place, the books and the butcher's row, the knowing looks and furtive glances. Her mind reeled as she replayed their encounters, but it caught on a single revelation like a broken clock. She wasn't alone. For the first time since she'd lost her family, Nika wasn't alone.
Why didn't you tell me what you were? She said.
Cochin tossed the dead bird into a trash can.
I didn't want to give you any reason to stay, he said. The heart soothe books. I shouldn't have given them to you.
Nika read between the lines. No matter how he tried to scare her away, he couldn't ignore the one thing that connected them. Cochin closed the remainder of the space between them. He was close enough for her to smell the blood on his clothing. Maybe she should have been afraid, given his propensity for murder, but in the moment, she only wanted him to soothe her again. He swallowed, and she could see the bob in his throat.
Nika, I'm sorry to have involved you. But now that I have, you can't go back to the Comies.
Why not? She asked, and her thoughts spun back to her original question. Why did you kill him, Cochin? He retreated a step, placing that cold distance between them again. A muscle flickered in his jaw, betraying his indecision. Cochin opened his mouth to speak, but a shout from outside drew their attention.
Nika!
That was Trin's voice, hollering from below the window. With a jolt of terror, Nika crossed the room and glanced down at the streets. There he was, slamming a fist against the door, looking out of place in this burrow with his tailored shirt.
Shit, she murmured.
What?
It's Trin. He must have followed me, she said, realizing she'd left the napkin on her nightstand.
Trin rapped his fist against the door.
Nika, I just want to talk. I believe you.
He believed her. Would his faith still hold if he found her with the masked man? With a hiccup of guilt, Nika felt herself tearing in two. Bring the Kongmis their murderer and clear her name? Or help a heart-soothe escape until she could hear his story? What does he want with you? Kochin asked. Already, he was tying off his ripped shirt and donning a robe over it all. They hired me to heal Hendon, but he already knew that. Right, the driver I saved. Her thoughts stumbled on his phrasing. Saved. You. It was you he remembered that day in the fox mask, but when he woke up, he thought it was me. Come with me then. The urgency of his voice unsteadied her. You're not safe with them, but I can take you somewhere safe, somewhere away from this mess. Not safe with the Kongmis? But I'm not the one who killed their father, she said, the words catching him like a net. You are. Kochin halted in the middle of straightening his robe, watching her. Are you going to turn me in? He asked. Their stares contested each other, daring the other to speak. Nika eyed the pistol on the desk, wondering if he'd move to grab it. Instead, he spread his arms, as though laid bare on her operating table. Downstairs, Trin continued banging until she heard the lock break free of the door. She wouldn't have to turn him in. She would just have to stand here, unyielding, until Trin came up to the door. Somehow, she knew Kochin would not leave her. Still, she hesitated, even as she heard the hardwood creaking the floor below them. Why did you do it? She demanded, her lips pressed thin. His eyes grew guarded. Because I had to. Because he discovered what you were? Because he threatened you? Nika wasn't so sure why she needed to know, why she hoped the reasoning would absolve him. Please, Kochin. Indecision warred behind his expression. I've made many choices to get where I am, he started, words measured. Now a demon has come for its due. But it doesn't have to come for you, too. I don't want you to end up like me. He'd made a similar comment before, with her knife in his stomach. She thought he'd meant a murderer. Now she wasn't so sure. And what is that exactly? He paused, as though the question surprised him, before saying, A blood carver. The word passed between them like an omen, and he extended a hand to her, his outstretched fingers an invitation. Come with me, Nika. I'm asking you to trust me. He'd kept secrets from her. He'd murdered a man. He'd pointed a gun at her. Yet, Kochin hadn't pulled the trigger. Kochin had lent her heart-soothe books. And Kochin was just like her. A heart-soothe. And for the same reason he couldn't shoot her. She felt herself step toward his hand. Because she'd gone so long in a drought that even if this was a well laced in poison, she would drink. Nika started into action, hooking a chair beneath the handle of the door and passing him his fox mask, lest Trin break through. They slipped out by the fire escape, hopping down the ladder and landing behind the cover of trash receptacles, where Kochin heaved aside wooden crates to reveal a sewer hole. A hand? He requested, crouching by the cover. Together, they hefted the metal hatch open, revealing a tunnel into darkness. A crash came from above, followed by a voice. Nika! It was Trin, standing at the top of the fire escape. His eyes widened when he saw Kochin, masked. What are you doing? She knew how this must have looked, her here with the Kongmi's masked murderer. Nika looked away from the intensity of his gaze, knowing that any suspicions he had just been confirmed. She wanted to tell him that she would return with all their answers, but she couldn't blindly give Kochin up. You! His expression, always so staunch, now shattered with disbelief. Trin's hands wrapped around the railing, as though he were prepared to jump down three stories. Mimi was right. Let's go, Nika, Kochin said, offering her a hand down the sewer tunnel. His eyes coaxed her behind the mask. Nika hesitated, caught in indecision, frozen between Kochin's outstretched hand and Trin's steely glare. A breath of silence settled, reigned only by the tinny screech of canaries.
Now it wasn't about any paltry sum of chem. It was about promises made and broken, lives saved and lost, friends found and abandoned. She stood before a choice: help the first family to trust her, or follow the last person in the city who might ever truly understand her. Between the two, the choice was simple. "If you know what's good for you," she said, "you won't follow us." Trin slammed a fist against the railing, rattling old metal. "They trusted you!" The crack in his voice sent a shard of ice through her heart. His voice held unbarred malice, and she knew he'd been anticipating this moment since the beginning, a reason to distrust her. Well, here it was. Nika turned away, staring instead into the sewer hole. She bit back thoughts of Mimi, or Andow, or Hendon, who'd extended their grace and their home. No, instead, she thought only of Cochin, of a loneliness dispelled by carving touch. "That was their mistake," she muttered. Then she took Cochin's hand. 17. Nika and Cochin fled by the sewers. In a city like Thumis, even the sewer systems had order. Still, she stumbled behind him, almost clumsy in the dark, relying more on his hand around hers than on her eyes. In the blackness, she saw Trin, silhouetted by the shop house, eyes frozen in betrayal. She blinked the image away. Cochin seemed to have the path memorized, turn by turn. Sewer grates and storm drains lit their path with slits of dying light, sunset subsiding into dusk as they continued along. By the time they came to a wide coastal sewer grate, the moon was rising, bathing the rocky shores of the dockyards in silver. This was a sight she was accustomed to. The stark construction of the docks silhouetted against an ocean of glassy crests and shattered moonlight. With the details washed away in the darkness, the city seemed almost an extension of the cliffs, with a contour made ridge-like by pagodic crests and swooping roofs. But Cochin didn't take her back into the city. Instead, they continued where the dockyards jutted out into the water, harboring Leviathan cruise ships and their fan-like junk sails rising between flat barges. This was a landmark of the Dogborough, the southernmost tip of the city, a place she'd frequented while her father still lived. Back then, he'd carried her on his shoulders, showing her the massive storybook ships and claiming he owned them. Despite the growing dusk, languid activities still hummed on the dockyards, boat workers tethering ships for the night, and engineers welding panels onto skeletal frames. They passed cruise ships suspended from cable cradles and submarine vessels that resembled beached whales in the darkness, metal carrion picked dry by shipbuilders. Now free from the sewers, Cochin removed his mask and fell to a slower pace at her side. She hadn't noticed when her hand had slipped out of his, but her skin still buzzed at the duration of their touch. "I think it's safe to say we've escaped," she said, but he didn't stop walking. "I know better than to underestimate the Kongmis by now," was all he said. He watched her out of the corner of his eye, but Nika kept her gaze fixed forward, almost afraid to invite him into further conversation. Looking at him wrenched guilt in her stomach, a feeling she tried to quell. So what if she had broken her agreement with the Kongmis? She'd never owed them anything. As with all her clients, she'd offered them a placebo of trust, and they'd been fools to take it. So why did it feel so terrible this time? Trin's pained expression flashed in her mind again, and Nika swallowed the lump in her throat. "Thank you, by the way," Cochin said, as if an afterthought, "for trusting me. I know it's a lot to ask." "Trust comes with answers," she countered. Some part of her, still clinging to the Kongmi household, needed to find the true reason behind their father's murder. "I'll answer your questions, Nika, but I won't drag you into my mistakes." She set her jaw with annoyance. Wasn't this how the Kongmis had acted, keeping her out of their conspiracies? Nika had hoped Cochin would be different. Still, she let the topic slide. For now. "How is it you soothe, then? I didn't know Thumans could have the gift."
They can't. But I'm not just human. I'm Yarongi's on my mother's side. Got all the looks of my father, though, didn't I?
He smiled at her, dark eyes alight as that familiar charm returned.
Did you learn from those books you lent me?
No, I learned from my mother. I have family in the countryside.
She's another heart-sooth? Nika asked, her eyes widening.
Yes, though she hides it too.
Do you...
Nika recalled him at the butcher's row and the chem he was prepared to spend on her.
Do you know any others?
His lips thinned into a frown. No, and I've spent all my years in Thumas looking.
So it's just us.
Just you, he amended. I'm not as gifted as you are. You healed an injury I couldn't, and I can't expend my own calories to soothe.
That doesn't make you any less of a heart-sooth.
Nika had doubted her own connection with the gift for too long to let him discredit himself. No matter how big or small his gift, he was a heart-sooth, just like her. Cochin blinked, looking disarmed, as if no one had ever told him that before. Maybe no one had.
That I'm the only heart-sooth who has to use animals to fuel my soothing.
Perhaps something's just missing, she mused aloud. Like the empathy organ.
As soon as she'd said it, she realized how foolish she sounded. He only gave her a curious look.
Empathy organ?
Nothing real, she said dismissively. Just something I've used to rationalize the source of heart-soothing. My grandmother used to tell me that soothing was all about the connection, but I could only see it as an organ.
Cochin smiled wryly. You mean a heart? Pretty sure I have one of those.
They reached a small jut of the dockyards, where a cluster of rowboats huddled behind a wave breaker, shielded from the violent rocking of the ocean. There, Cochin untethered a wide dinghy, its colorful paint peeling to bare wood.
Be my guest, he said, sweeping an arm toward the back seat.
She stepped inside, catching her balance as it teetered, and he took a spot at the bow. Cochin looked incongruous here on the water, garbed in well-fitted black attire, with sleeves pushed up to his elbows.
Feels an awful lot like you're taking me somewhere they'll never find my body, Nika remarked as they pushed off into black waters.
Let's not forget who stabbed who, he returned.
You pulled the gun on me.
You pulled the knife first.
I think I was justified. It still hurt.
But I suppose you know that.
He grinned, a wan thing, and she realized she'd never had anyone else explain the nuances of heart-soothing to her before. His eyes fell to the waters, and he added,
I'm sorry for putting you in that position. I only wanted you to leave the Kongmis and escape this city while you still could. But I wouldn't have pulled the trigger. I'm no...
murderer, he might have said, but he didn't finish the sentence.
Nika felt now wasn't the time to press for answers, so she asked instead,
Where are we going?
Somewhere no one knows about. Somewhere safe.
Where once those words might have sounded cryptic, that sinister edge was now rubbing off. Though she didn't fully trust him, she owed it to the mother, who had brought together the last heart-sooths in Thumas, to at least hear him out. The dinghy sailed forward in time to his rowing, water sloshing against its sides. At this time of spring, dusk was a welcome reprieve from the heat, and the journey was a placid one. They followed the coastline, then slipped up the delta into the rivulets, where Cochin nosed their dinghy into an inlet of water cupped in the cliffside. There, sitting atop the mirror surface of the river, was a lone houseboat. From a distance, it seemed a small thing, but as they grew closer, she saw how wide and long it was, its curved hull large enough for a miniature solarium at the stern and a living compartment toward the bow. Thatched awnings curved over windows, and a veranda sat at the top with a view overlooking the black water.
You can stay here while I sort things out, Cochin said.
As they approached the porch at the back of the houseboat, Cochin oriented their dinghy parallel, and Nika caught the ladder. He pulled himself up and found the rope in the darkness. Together, they tethered the dinghy in place as the night dipped into full blackness, the last of the sunlight dissipating under the horizon.
Kochin replaced it with generator-powered incandescents. She heard the slosh and smelt the odor of gas before a strip of light bulbs blinked to life, illuminating the rest of the vessel. It was a homey space, larger on the inside than it looked. They passed through the solarium, which housed a small garden of potted plants, and entered into the main cabin. There was a kitchen space on one end, and a large bed on the other, hidden behind a sheer curtain. In the space between was a plush lounging area, warmed by a wood stove and softened by a colorful collection of pillows. A stairwell flanked by bookshelves led up to the roof, letting out into what Nika assumed to be the veranda. She'd never been on such a luxurious vessel before, and was impressed by the construction, until she saw the emblazoned seal on the railing. Kongmi Industries. Of course. The sight of it deposited a new pit of guilt in her stomach. "Make yourself at home," Kochin said, tossing items from his pockets onto the table. Then he looked at her, as though awaiting her appraisal. It was a comfortable space, but she noticed there were only furnishings for one. One bed, a table, and a single dining chair beside it. "You've made yourself a nice place here," she remarked. "If you'd taken me here instead of that pet shop, maybe I wouldn't have stabbed you." Nika kicked her shoes off and collapsed into an armchair. "Now that we have a bit more privacy, is there something you'd like to tell me?" Kochin gave her a thin smile, propping open the awnings and preparing the wood stove. "Not particularly." "I've abandoned the Kongmis. You've taken me far from the city. Surely by now, I deserve answers." "Why does it matter so much to you?" "Because Hendon wakes up accusing me, so I need to know the truth."
"So you can tell the Kongmis? Do you really care about them?"
She shrugged to cover up the guilt lodged in her chest. "They fed and housed me. I'm grateful, but I don't owe them anything." "You said he didn't discover or threaten you. Then why? Simply because you could?"
His eyes flared at that. "I didn't enjoy it, if that's what you're saying," he said, a withheld force behind his words. His expression darkened. "It wasn't my choice. But in the world of the Kongmis, in my world, anything can be exploited. Even something like heart-soothing. That's a lesson I learned too late."
She opened her mouth to tell him that she'd already learned that lesson, years ago, but realized that she hadn't. Not in the way he had. Now she saw that heart-soothing was not the same thing for the two of them. For him, it sounded sacred, newly defiled. For her, heart-soothing had always been a practical thing, so integral to who she was that it could not be divine, for she was so haplessly mortal. "Instead," she said, "I'm sorry. I'll be out of your hair by morning." He gave her an unconvinced look.
"You have nowhere to go."
"I have an apartment in the dog burrow," she said, though she wasn't even sure of that anymore, with the rent overdue.
"As long as it's not the Kongmis."
"Because you're afraid I'll turn you in?"
"No, not that."
"Because you still think I don't belong?"
"No, no, then why?"
"Because I'm trying to protect you," he said, stilling the room. For a moment, Nika could have sworn that even the houseboat stopped rocking. If that was the truth, and it was an act of concern rather than contempt, she wasn't sure how to respond. At last, she managed.
"Protect me from what?"
"From whom?" he corrected, and something clicked in her mind. Kochin had never wanted to kill Mr. Kongmi. He'd said it was a demon coming for its due. He'd been coerced.
"Someone used you to kill Mr. Kongmi," she realized aloud.
Though he didn't answer, the set of his jaw confirmed her suspicion.
"Who?"
His eyes revealed nothing.
"Surely, you know by now."
Her first instinct was the butcher's, but Nika parsed through his words, his actions. Everything he'd done, forgetting her appointment, interrupting her conversations, driving her from the city. Kochin would have her believe it was all meant to protect her. If that was the case, then there was a single man at the heart of it all, someone she'd considered the son to Kochin's shadow, who had hooked and reeled her, only for Kochin to cut the line.
It could have only been... Dr. Santo, she said, her throat growing dry. The realization settled in like rigor mortis. Dr. Santo, who loved the siblings, who shared in all their conspiracies. The murderer? Something about it felt so wrong, but the pieces fit no other way. Cochin nodded, wordless, and leaned against the windowsill. So now you know why you should stay. Why did he do it? Why do you care? You tell me, and I'll stay. Cochin let out a ragged breath. I won't lie to you, but I'm not involving you. So, what's your next move? Stay under his employ? Live a lie? Murder again if he asks for it? Something fragile fractured across his expression. Nika, I'm offering you safety and freedom. Isn't that enough for you? Maybe once, she said. But it gets tiring, being thrown away and kicked out after I'm done being useful. Anytime I finally feel like I might belong somewhere, it's based on conditions and pity. And now... now I find someone just like me, learn that I'm not alone in this city anymore, and he's so eager to send me off, as if we're not the last Hartsus in Thumas, as if that doesn't mean anything to him. The words felt messy as they escaped her. Maybe she'd misjudged him. Maybe she'd invented this longing, the loneliness of two flytraps in a garden of orchids. Maybe... growing up with a family, within the upper city, Cochin had never wanted for more. Now she only awaited his judgment, wondering if he knew his next words had the power to break her. At last, he said, his tone distant. I've been stabbed today. I'm tired. We can talk about it tomorrow. Nika stood speechless. That was it then? She could wax her sadness, pour the contents of her chest out onto the wooden floor. And that's all he had to say? I'll spend one night, she said, and leave in the morning. To where? She wasn't yet sure. Not the Kongmis, because they'd sooner confine her than believe it was Dr. Santo behind everything. But anywhere other than here. When Cochin still offered her nothing, she scoffed and pushed past him toward the top of the houseboat. Some privacy on this small vessel. The view over the water, framed by the slopes around the inlet, unfurled like a scroll. Nika seldom had time to appreciate the city's beauty, but she breathed it in now, climbing atop the wooden veranda. Unbridled nature was a scarcity in Thumas, and she took the moment to appreciate it, legs dangling over the side of the boat, and body caught between two oceans, one of stars and one of salt. The brightest star in the sky was called Majora. Her father had taught her that. He told her it would always guide her home as it did him. Except, it hadn't guided him home, not at the end, and she no longer knew what home meant. She had almost thought she'd find one with the Kongmis, in Dr. Santo's lab, with Trin's offer. But that had never been an option. Not when they would accuse her over a misremembered dream. Not when she'd thrown the opportunity away. She'd spent weeks with them and healed their driver, but all that had been reneged by one act of betrayal. And for what? For a heart-sooth who had, from the beginning, only pushed her away? Suddenly, the injustice of it reared its indignant head. It wasn't fair that choosing a heart-sooth meant betraying the Kongmis, that she'd taken off Cochin's fox mask only to find another one underneath. Before she could help it, a tear welled in the corner of her eye and rolled down the contour of her cheek. She lifted a hand to her chest, rubbing the lump where her bone ring dangled beneath her shirt. The ring was an act of remembrance, but it felt hollow when she'd spurned the only family who might begin to welcome her. Hey, came Cochin's voice behind her. Anika hurriedly swiped at her eyes. When she turned, she found him emerging from the stairwell with a blanket and a plate of seared rice cakes. You mind? He asked. Nika didn't respond, looking instead over the dark water. With a shaky exhale, he approached her, draping the blanket over her shoulders
and sliding the plate toward her. A peace offering, she supposed. Even as he sat beside her, she didn't meet his eyes. For a long pause, neither of them spoke, both watching the sway of the water. She heard the draw of his breath, as reliable as the rhythm of the ocean.
"I'm sorry, Nika. I've been a shoddy host, haven't I?" he said at last.
"The worst," she agreed, not deigning to meet his gaze.
"It means everything to me what we are," he confided, and only then did she look at him. "I know I've been distant, but I don't mean to hurt you. That's the last thing I want."
"Then why scare me away?"
"Because I wish someone had done the same for me. If I had the chance to escape this, I'd take it in a heartbeat."
Nika watched him, wary of their new proximity.
"You told me to leave before I lost whatever I had left. What did you lose?"
He let out a long breath, vulnerability softening his expression.
"Everything," he breathed. "My freedom. My peace."
Something about him deflated, and suddenly he didn't look at all cold or menacing, just tired, lonely, like he'd spent years trying to hold his world together, only for her to pry it apart. For a moment, she forgot about the Kongmis, their murder and accusations. It was just about Ko-Chin, and her sitting beside him, two heartsuits snared by the same city. After a stretch of silence, Ko-Chin spoke again, his voice unguarded.
"Dr. Santo had taken so much from me that I'd run out of things to give, and I'd always resigned myself to lose those things, because they were only ever mine to lose. Then you show up, a heart soothe, the only thing in this cursed city that matters, and he's trying to take you too. I can't let him destroy you. Not like he's destroyed me, my life, my heart soothing."
His admission left her breathless, a quiet truth when she'd heard so many lies. Something shifted in her chest, a tugging feeling, and Nika found herself wanting more than just answers. She wanted to help him.
"I'm sorry, Ko-Chin," Nika said, and she truly was.
"Stay," he said again. "I'll tell you everything, but there's somewhere I want to take you first. Can we agree on that?" His eyes beseeched her. If she knew what was best for her, she would take his dinghy in the night and row herself back to some forgettable part of the city, somewhere they'd never find her. She would forget the existence of another heart soothe, because what difference did it make when he pushed her away? She would silence the new, unwelcome warmth in her chest when she thought of Ko-Chin, who'd killed one of the most influential men in Thumis. But Nika did none of those things. Rationality be damned. She might have wondered why she'd helped him, why she'd abandoned the Kongmis for him, why she stayed even now. But she already knew. It was because he was a heart soothe. In this city, that was reason enough.
"Deal,"
she said. Then, "Where are we going?"
"Somewhere removed. And safe," he said. "My home."
18. Nika woke in a bed, sunken into a plush of blankets and pillows. Something sizzled beyond the draped divider, and aromatic smoke wafted from the kitchen. The night before returned to her. She'd been on the veranda, falling asleep to stars and rice cakes. With a swallowed yawn, she sat up and pulled aside the curtain to find Ko-Chin in the kitchen, frying a pair of eggs. His eyes flicked to her as he worked.
"Good morning."
"You carried me to your bed?" Nika noticed the blanket and pillow nested in the armchair. He must have spent the night there instead.
"You fell asleep on the roof. The boat tends to rock at night, and I didn't want you to drown."
"How considerate," she said, though her muscles tensed at the thought of him carrying her down here.
"Look, Ko-Chin, about last night."
"Breakfast first," he insisted, plating the eggs beside neat domes of rice and pork before setting the dishes on the low table. Here, I'll hazard you my cooking. Nika bit her tongue, surveying the room. In the daylight, it was a different atmosphere. Lacquered wood glowing gold and houseplants nestled into every possible corner. Shelves lined the curve of the hull, laden with books and journals, and the idyllic reflection of the water danced across the ceiling. She slipped out of the bed, aware of how dirty she was inside this well-kept houseboat. Compared to what she'd experienced, his cooking didn't look bad at all, though it was a far cry from the Kongmi's chefs. It felt unfamiliar to share a meal with him, and if Kochin had given her this dish a week ago, she would have thought it poisoned. But Kochin dug in as though they did this every day, and some part of her thawed at the sight of his own comfort. Now, in the warm glow of the houseboat, she noticed his Yarongi's features where she never had before. The darkness of his eyes, the slope of his nose, the wave in his hair. All concealed behind that pale Thuman skin. "We'll leave after breakfast," he said. "You promised me answers."
"Answers once we get there."
"Answers first." A bout of laughter escaped him.
"You're incorrigible. One answer now. Take it or leave it."
Nika thought hard. While there was so much she needed to know, she remembered the Kongmis, and her first question was on their behalf. What motive would Dr. Santo possibly have to kill Mr. Kongmi? He loves that family.
He loves his research more.
But Mr. Kongmi? They were partners. Friends. That couldn't have been the only reason. A life ended over scientific prestige. She wasn't sure if it was unbelievable, or if she simply didn't want to believe it.
Mr. Kongmi's only sin was his righteousness. He discovered Dr. Santo's scientific methods were illegitimate, falsified, unreproducible, he responded, giving her a dark look. He told Dr. Santo to come clean, or he would, and Dr. Santo doesn't take ultimatums lightly.
Nika's heart dropped. And that's where you come in. Kochin nodded, crossing the room to a chest beneath his bed, from which he pulled out an envelope. When he returned, he placed it in front of her, beside her abandoned breakfast.
A couple months ago, I received this letter under the door of the shop house.
Nika took the envelope between her fingers, looking for his permission to open it. He gave her a slow nod. She read the brief letter within.
I have need of your particular talents. Kongmi Vun Quan has aggrieved me for far too long. He is an obstacle that must be eliminated. I will leave it up to your discretion as to how that may be accomplished. Leave no witnesses. And remember, I know.
A dozen more questions sprung to mind. Know what? And how did Dr. Santo learn about Kochin's heart soothing? But one in particular vexed her. You said earlier that Dr. Santo's research was illegitimate. Illegitimate how? Smiling, Kochin clicked his tongue.
Miss Swan, I believe I only agreed to one question, he said, and left it at that.
They took the houseboat upriver. For how homey it was, Nika hadn't realized it was also a functional boat. Sitting at a wheel and lever at the bow, Kochin guided them toward the inner parts of Thumas, using civilian waterways and avoiding commercial barges. For the hours-long journey, she sat next to Kochin at the bow, her feet dangling over the side and bare toes almost skimming the water. Mostly, they sat in silence, but she was content just to watch the city from an angle she'd never seen before. The fishing boats and yachts, the bottoms of bridges she'd only known from a trolley rail, the small parts of people's lives she captured at the edge of the water. The burrows were harder to distinguish by boat travel. Rivulets carved circuitous paths around the city, not deigning to obey the strict order of the roads. There was comfort in feeling that the water belonged to her, even if the rest of the city didn't. Soon, they escaped the urban heart of the city to its rural outskirts. Out here, terraced farmlands replaced the industrial cityscape, and the dark-roofed houses hid between trees, rather than the other way around. For how small Thumis was compared to its neighboring countries, the city-state was comprised of just central Thumis and its surrounding territories. Nika had never been this far into the country. Her entire life had been contained within the 12 boroughs of central Thumis. It was only when their houseboat puttered off the main waterways and toward inland ones that Nika drew back from the water and looked at Cochin. "How much longer?" she asked. "An hour or so. It's been a while." "When was the last time you came home?" He pressed his lips together, eyes steady on the horizon. 3 years. Family within a day's travel, and he hadn't seen them in 3 years. From the solemnity in his eyes, she knew it was not simply out of neglect. "What happened?"
I'll tell you when we get there," he said. "What about your family?"
He was avoiding answers again, but she read the apprehension in his expression and let this one pass. Few had asked about her family in earnest. Some clients had tried, an attempt to ease the mood of the room while she played with tinctures and tonics. Those, she usually shut down with a grim answer. "My parents died when I was young, and I lost my grandmother to a house fire." But she didn't want to shut Cochin down. "I don't know much about who they were on Yarong. I just know my grandmother on my mother's side was a heart-sooth matriarch. So when Daltony invaded, the village banded together to help her escape to Thumis. They knew she would be interned otherwise. She met my father's family in Thumis, and my parents fell in love as children. As I've been told, my father was at sea when I was born, but he saw 3 cormorants flying low over open water, and somehow knew I'd arrived, so he begged his captain to turn back to shore." Her mother had recited this story as they both counted down the days before her father would return from sea, but Nika had never told anyone else before. Her parents had had a faded love, one she couldn't imagine for herself, mostly because her grandmother advised her so often to hide her gift. And who could love her if they didn't even know her?
"My mother's side was not too different, escaping Yarong like that," Cochin said. "Only, instead of finding anyone of Yarongi's descent, my mother fell for a Thuman scholar. I'm not sure what he was more infatuated with, her or her heart soothing. But they do love each other, in a way."
"In a way?"
"Their love was give and take. He opened doors for her. She opened his mind." He draped an arm over the wheel in a pensive pose. "But I suppose that's what love is, isn't it? An unspoken contract? Is that how you feel?" She leaned toward him, part curious and part amused. This was a language she understood, conceptualizing romance with logic.
"No, I guess not. I find it a little absurd," Cochin said instead.
"In all the history of heart-soothing, there have arisen many taboos. Taking lives, bringing back the dead, breaching consent. But you know what isn't taboo? Planting love. Because it's not possible."
"Exactly." He smiled, and she realized he'd anticipated her answer.
"So, if we can't possibly soothe or source love, who are we to define it? Being honest, I'm not sure it's even biological. Otherwise, wouldn't we have felt it in patience before?"
Nika turned her eyes toward the river, where vegetation brushed against the side of the boat. Her last client from the horse burrow came to her, that man with the sick wife. Though his love radiated from him like heat from a young sun, she hadn't felt it from her soothing. It had come from the tender look in his eyes, the softness in his words when he spoke to her, the lightness of his touch.
"Maybe."
Nika met Cochin's eye. "I never would have thought you were romantic."
"Oh? What did you think of me?"
"When I first met you? An asshole," she said plainly, drawing a laugh from him.
"Well, forgive me for trying to save the only other heart-sooth in Thumis."
Nika watched him, reading the loneliness behind his humored words. She placed herself into his shoes, finding another heart-sooth like himself after so long,
but choosing solitude over the chance that she might know any of his suffering.
Truthfully, she began again, when I first met you, I thought you had it all. A position in high society, respect, money.
A mask, Nika, he said gently. I wore a mask to pretend I belong there. It takes something from you each day, denying a vital part of yourself. I didn't want you to have to go through that too. She almost had, hiding her gift behind gloves and butchering her familial name to fit in.
I appreciate that. But were the insults necessary?
They would have worked on me. Though if I'd known how prideful you are, I might have tried flattery instead.
How very thoughtful, Venkochin.
You're welcome, Miss Swan.
The false name dislodged something fragile in her throat, her ring feeling especially heavy. It's Swanya-san, she said. If anyone deserved to know, it was another heart soothe. My real name is Swanya-san Nika.
Swanya-san Nika,
he said in a tone near reverence. What a beautiful name. To hear her familial name from the lips of another pricked something deep in her chest, an organ she thought dormant. She returned her gaze to the water, to the pink lilies that bloomed between aquatic weeds.
Yes, she said. I've always liked it.
When she looked back at him, she found his attention on her. He regarded her as she'd regarded the ocean, with equal parts awe and fascination. Like she was both the tempest that sank junks and the gentle lap of water at the side of his houseboat.
I wish I'd met you in another life,
he sighed over the steering wheel, so quiet that it might not have been meant for her ears.
The mother is never fair, is she?
Nika didn't know how to answer that, so their conversation fell to silence. At last, they reached the slow, calm waters of Cochin's hometown, where they docked between similar skiffs and fishing vessels. There, they dropped their dinghy and headed toward shore. Rural Thumis was a world apart from its industrial counterpart, hilly, disorganized, and run down, its streets paved with dirt rather than stone. At a glance, it might have just looked like a forested mountainside, but she saw the rice farms that sculpted the hills and the gloss of shingled roofs peeking out between gaps in the flora. The technology must have been a decade behind, clothes hanging from lines rather than tumble-dried by automatons, but she noticed the Kongmi name even here, though in automaton models that looked stiff and thick compared to the sleek ones in Central.
Welcome to Chengtin, Cochin said, sweeping his hand down the dirt road, which she then realized was the entirety of the town.
She had to wonder how a little place like this spawned a socialite like Cochin. Quaint, she remarked.
I thought you were used to quaint?
I've gotten used to ostentatious. Better get used to quaint again. He pointed to the hillside, where the white facade of houses dotted the landscape between forested thickets and winding dirt roads. There, at the top of the terrain, where the forest gapped for the evening sun, was a house flying a variety of fishing flags, flapping red and blue and yellow in the wind.
That's my home, he said.
Cochin, why did you ever leave? He gave her a rueful look.
For the same reason you would want to stay with the Kongmis. I saw something golden in the city, and had to have it.
With a sigh to dispel his sentimentality, he tipped his head toward the hill, and they both started down the path. Their route zigzagged up the hill, and Nika found herself having fantasies about the house at the top. It was a house her family would have loved, near the water and out of the city. A house where she might have been able to wave to her father in his ships as they passed. A house that she could imagine calling home. Just as they were about to crest the hill and see the house in full, Cochin stopped. Nika nearly stumbled into him for how abrupt it was. She glanced up, awaiting an explanation. But he only stared at the top of the hill, his feet planted in the dirt as though something forbade him from taking another step. At last, he drew an envelope out of his jacket pocket
and passed it to her.
Please give this to them. It's the stipend I send home every month. Tell them the note is from me.
Nika cocked her head.
You're not coming?
For a moment, he seemed to consider it, the tip of his foot inching forward. In the end, he drew back.
I can't.
Why?
I'm not the same boy they sent off to Central Thumas 3 years ago.
But Cochin, you—
Please, Nika.
He gave her an imploring look, and she relinquished, knowing better than to argue anymore.
I'll wait for you at the beach.
With a nod, she started toward the house, clutching the letter in her hands. It was a house that teemed with character. Floors stacked lopsidedly atop one another, and a wild garden overgrowing its picket fence. Now she saw the flagpole up close, its many flags dancing in the wind. As she drew nearer, the barking of a dog started up from inside. Nika reached the door, raised her fist, knocked. The dog began another ruckus, and she could hear a woman's voice shushing it. Footsteps creaked closer before the door opened. The woman was Yerangiz. It was written there in her flat nose, tan skin, black eyes. She had the complexion Nika's mother had had, sunspots and freckles speckling her cheeks, and hands weathered, but Nika saw the features that she'd given Cochin, the intelligent eyes, soft lips, dark brow. Nika remembered to speak.
Mrs. Venn?
She asked. She thrust the envelope forward as though it could speak for her. I brought a letter from Cochin. At once, Mrs. Venn's eyes widened.
Cochin?
My name is Swan Yusan Nika, she said, surprising herself with how naturally her real name came off her tongue. I'm a friend of your son's.
Where is he?
Nika shook her head, apologetic.
He's not here, but I came to deliver this.
She thought of Cochin, likely just a few steps away now, hiding from his home, his mother.
Come inside. I'll start some tea. Stay the night. And you can call me Auntie Yatanla, or Auntie Ye.
Nika blinked at the trisyllabic Yerongi's name, at the way Auntie Ye rounded it out with an accent, how all of her speech was filtered through that familiar, warming accent, despite her perfect Thuman vocabulary. She sat Nika down in a chair and placed a kettle on the stovetop. As the dog inspected her shoes, Nika's eyes wandered the house. Now, she saw the houseboat had been fashioned in its image, with houseplants stuffed in every corner, and an abundance of natural sunlight filtering through cracked shutters and dusty windows. Her gaze landed on a wall of family portraits, a young Cochin with his mother, his father, two other boys, and a puppy. She could pick Cochin out from the three boys easily. The younger had a mane of curly hair, and the older had a stoic look that reminded her a bit of Trin. Even as a child, Cochin possessed the same charming smile and witty eyes. Both the puppy and the children grew through each portrait, with Cochin absent from the very last.
I'm sorry, Auntie Ye said. His father and the boys aren't home right now, but they'll be in tonight.
It's okay, Auntie. I don't think I can stay that long. She placed the letter on the table. Cochin wanted me to give you this. He said it's the monthly stipend, and a letter. Auntie Ye brought over the tea and poured them each a cup before seating herself. She examined the letter, as though afraid to open it. Instead, her fingers played at the seal with hesitance.
He's here now, isn't he?
She asked, her lively voice from earlier dropping into something subdued.
In Chengtin?
Nika, not prepared to lie to a new auntie, nodded.
Why didn't he come?
He's not ready. Auntie Ye's brows knit knowingly.
Well, tell him that we're ready for him.
She took a draw of her tea, her eyes traveling up to Nika, examining her.
And who are you to him?
Nika searched for the right title. A co-conspirator? A friend? Another heart soothe.
That admission came with no ceremony here, and instead of surprise or fear, Auntie Ye's eyes only softened.
Ah, so you know about him. And me.
Nika nodded.
Did he do it then? She asked. Kochin always told us he would show Thumis what it truly meant to be a heart soothe, that he would change the way they viewed it.
Nika's chest fell. He'd entered a city hoping he could change it. The city changed him instead. Central Thumis is stubborn, she answered vaguely. I don't think even Kochin could change its mind by himself.
Seems like you know him well if he told you about his heart soothing.
Auntie Ye raised an inquisitive eyebrow, but Nika couldn't offer her anything more substantive.
Tell me then, is Kochin doing well? He sends us money, but I would like to know the truth, please.
Nika searched for an answer. When she'd first met him, she thought he'd been doing more than well for a boy his age. But the true Ven Kochin, the one behind all the masks, just wanted to go home.
He carries a lot by himself, but he's not alone.
Not anymore. Beyond that, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Let me see what this letter is all about, then.
At last, Auntie Ye found the courage to open the letter, careful not to rip the paper. She pulled it out, a brief note and a tall stack of bills. As she read, her expression remained indecipherable as her lips shaped out the words. Poignant emotions passed through her eyes, but Nika recognized one above them all. Yearning. Auntie Ye simply missed her son. At last, she set the letter down, shaking her head.
We cannot just move, Auntie Ye said,
and Nika cocked a brow.
Move? The Chem is generous, but it is not an issue of money. Kochin is asking us to uproot our entire livelihoods, she elaborated,
and Nika caught on to the contents of the letter. I'll be sure to tell him that, she said, and Auntie Ye gave her a curious look.
You will?
Auntie Ye gestured to the letter. But he is asking us to take you with us. Nika's throat tightened as her brain processed those words. He'd lied to her. He'd lied to her. Kochin never had any intention of telling her the truth. He was planning on leaving here without her. She stood, her chair scraping across the floor.
Thank you, Auntie Ye, she said in a rush, bowing. Thank you for the tea. Thank you for the kindness. I need to go.
Auntie Ye opened her mouth to protest, but Nika was already at the door. Before she left, she turned to say,
Auntie Ye, Kochin loves you.
Then, she was gone. 19. Nika raced to the edge of the cliff, worried that she'd see his houseboat on the horizon, drifting back toward Central without her. The sun was setting on the water, and she squinted against its quavering light, looking for the telltale silhouette. Instead, she found Kochin standing on the beach, his back toward her as he watched the surf. Relief released through her exhale, and she started down the cliffside, opting not for the zigzagging path, but for a straight one, stumbling directly through bramble and thicket.
Kochin!
She called, and he turned just in time to catch her as the cliffside spat her out.
Nika, you're Ven Kochin? How dare you?
She seethed, with half a mind to push him into the water and let the current take him.
You strung me along with the promise of answers just to leave me here?
His expression grew apologetic.
I was planning on it, but not anymore.
I remembered how relentless you are, and you're right. That's not fair. I owe you answers. This time, I won't evade them. I swear. Now he offered answers, but Nika was already beginning to understand. The letter Dr. Santo wrote, it said, I know. He was talking about your family, wasn't he? That was why Kochin had sent the money to leave. Kochin swallowed, the stone in his throat bobbing. He knows what I am, what my mother is, where I live.
He's threatened their peace, their lives. It destroyed me to take Mr. Kongmi's life. But if I hadn't, I could have lost my family.
So you thought you could send me off with them? Solve two problems at once?
Kochin winced at her tone.
You're not a problem, Nika. I just...
He turned back toward the cliff, where the roof of his childhood home peeked over the foliage.
I know my family would love you. And I think you could really love them too. A family where heart-soothing is valued. A place you could belong. Don't you want that?
Yes, that's what she'd always wanted, wasn't it?
But what about you?
It's too late for me. But not for you.
You're giving up before you've even tried?
I have tried. And it cost me. The force of his words quieted her, and as though noticing her reserve, his expression softened. With a long sigh, Kochin gestured her toward a secluded copse of foliage near the cliffside, a quiet recess that promised a story. Obliging, Nika followed him. With their backs against the hill, and their eyes turned to the water, they sat. Kochin's lips parted. It took a moment longer for the words to come.
3 years ago, when I was 16, I came to Central Thumis for university. I'd won a scholarship to attend, and in my acceptance speech, I thanked my mother. That's when Dr. Santo first approached me, much like he did you, with a business card.
He paused, as though these words were foreign to him when spoken aloud, as though he'd never had to confess the truth to another before. She almost wanted to coax more out of him, but she let his thoughts collect in their own time. Eventually, he went on. At the time, his research initiative was just beginning. It felt exhilarating to be coming in on the ground floor of something that big. Dr. Santo took me under his wing and placed me on his personal project. Organ transplantation. Kochin said those final words with such foreboding that Nika felt instinctive dread curdle in her stomach. Trin had told her a different angle to this story. The first doctor to perform an organ transplant. The medical miracle suddenly seemed much more sinister.
What do you know of organ transplantation? He asked.
Very little.
Well, organs don't like being outside their original owners. They rebel against new bodies. Either they kill the body, or the body kills them. You can surgically transplant a new organ without too much trouble. Keeping it alive is a different problem. Dr. Santo discovered how to keep them alive. But for that, he needed
a heart soothe, Nika finished, catching on. Kochin's expression set, a muscle clenched in his jaw.
I'd read his papers like scripture. I understood what would happen to those patients if I didn't use my gift. I think he must have guessed what I was from the very beginning. He took me to the postoperative ward and showed me all his declining transplant patients.
And you told him you're a heart soothe?
Kochin scoffed. Idiot I was. I healed a man right